Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Here are some of the questions we'll be discussing today, Monday, February 25th, 2013. Is sequestration really dangerous? Are rising home prices causes for optimism? And what about the U.S. economy? Are we still headed for trouble? And you'll be able to give us a call today at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. We do want to hear from you, so give us a call. But first, let's get started today with the market report. And markets were very odd today for this Monday morning. Let me bring up the gold prices early morning trading. Gold was up about 20 for the futures, and now we're looking up $11, almost 12, at $15.94. Silver's up 28 cents at $29.14. Platinum was down 5 at $16.10, and palladium was up 3 at $745. U.S. index today, 81.69. up 22, so it's nice to see gold up with that being up as much as it is. And I'm just taking a look at the Dow. I guess they really hit the Dow today, but crude oil was down today, down 34 at 92.79. And let's take a peek at the paper markets. What did they do today? Didn't follow much along. Actually, they were up about 50, 60 points at the same time gold was up early this morning, and they certainly took a big reversal. It's the worst post of 2013. Of course, the year's only 2 months old. Down 216 points at 13,784. I wonder if they're going to still show their little ticker on the financial news programs where it shows they're only 200 points away from their top of 14,002. So now they're going to have to make it 400 points. Anyway, the NASDAQ down 45 at 3116 at 16. S&P down 27 at 1487. Well, I guess the markets didn't like that 10-year yield being over 1.90. It's 1.90. Folks, they can't let it get up much above 2. There's talks of it going to 2.25, maybe 2.50 this year. And if you want to talk about bringing this economy to a halt, that will do it. The euro, that's down also, trading at 1.30. So all in all, gold had a fantastic day. We'll see if it can get closing up above that 1600 level. And that would be a very good sign if it did tomorrow. I like these little steps, you know, $12 here, $5 here. And those are the kind of upticks I like to see. Same way with silver. So maybe we're on a pretty good level at moving up. But prices, still, it's a great time to be buying, folks. Just because that is up doesn't mean that you should stay away from it. And again, if you're going to buy, you just buy. Because in the long run, the trend is your friend. There really isn't anything else out there except Alfred Addisk. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. There's a little more out there besides me.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I've learned to understand that. I didn't think that when I was a young man, but at my age, I've learned, there's two or three things other than me out there, you know.
Oh, okay.
You get enough testosterone going, and you are pretty much the king. You know, understand that? That's just part of being young. That's true for any young male. You learn, some of us learn the hard way that we're not the king. Some of us come to accept it over time, but you get stoned on your own testosterone, Melody. It is a heady brew.
I wouldn't know.
Well, I understand, but I remember. And you can't understand why you are stoned. You don't understand until after you're not stoned, and then you look back and say,
Holy cow.
My God. Must have been out of my mind. Well, in any case.
Us girls have something similar, but...
Yeah, it's called estrogen. You're as crazy as men are. You're just crazy in a different way.
Absolutely.
You know, it just works a different way. It's got... It's like two... You know, they say opposites attract. I'm not absolutely certain if they're opposites or similars. But it's like two positive posts on a magnet or something. You know, you join them and they... I don't know.
Yeah. We'll
hopefully
never know.
Hopefully one of the two at least is sane. And in fact, what usually seems to happen is men are pretty much crazy until they turn 30. And that's when their testosterone starts to diminish to some degree. Women, on the other hand, are pretty nice until they turn 30, and that's when they start to crack up.
Aww.
So it's a situation where you got crazy men up until age 30, and after that, then you have crazy women. Now the men are ready to play nice, and the women says, "Oh no, we got scores to settle, Bubba."
That's your theory.
It's an observation. It doesn't rise to the level of a theory or even a hypothesis.
No, I was
just,
always nice. I was always nice.
Well, and that.
Hey, let's talk about something else.
All right. One thing we could talk about is the Dow is down over 200 points.
Yeah, how about that?
Gold is up over 10 bucks. Mm-hmm. Is there a common denominator that might explain this?
It's interesting because this is the way it's supposed to work. I mean, usually the theory was always, the Dow is down and gold will go up. That was a long time theory because it shows that things are not well and you have people that are fleeing out of the paper into gold for something of quality of that safe haven. But over the years, we've seen stocks go up. We've seen gold go up. We've seen stocks go down. We've seen gold go down. So I think today is isn't right is you have the index up along with gold. So,
yeah. I don't put much faith in any of the numbers.
Neither do I.
All right. I think somebody's making these things up most of the time, but reality does intrude from time to time. And I don't know if it intrudes because it actually intrudes or people in positions of power say, well, we better do this so it looks like such and such has an influence. But what I'm wondering about is the threat of the sequester in of $85 billion from government funds. Is that what's pushing gold up? And is that, or could that also be, what's pushing the Dow down? Now, I'm not going to allege there's really a causal relationship. It's just something where you sit back and say, maybe yes. What do you think?
I agree. And I think March is going to be an interesting month. What I find interesting is they're not talking much about what's going to be happening in March compared to how they did the media frenzy on the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, I know, but they're still pushing it. In fact, it's our first question on this. Is sequestration really dangerous? And the Washington Times has a headline out, White House ups rhetoric on dangers of sequester. Okay, danger, 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 Will Robertson. We are coming to sequester. what is sequester? Enacted in 2011, Congress said, look, if we don't get our house in order on our own, we will impose automatic spending cuts starting in 2013. And we're going to have $85 billion spending cuts in 2013, and then another $85 billion the following year, and so on for some time into the future. That's the theory. And, of course, everyone is screaming now, does this pose a danger? On the one hand, an $85 billion sequester. They're going to cut the budget by cut spending by $85 trillion, $85 billion, starting this Friday. That translates into about 8% of the federal deficit. You can figure the government will probably spend $1.1 trillion in borrowed money, deficit spending in 2013. If the $85 billion sequester kicked in, it means government would have to diminish the amount of money it borrows by 8.5%, thereabouts, 8%, something like that. It's not a number to sniff at, but it's not the end of the world either. It's a little bit serious. It's not completely serious. So how dangerous is this? Will it be as dangerous as the fiscal cliff? All right. They made it sound like we're going to go over Niagara Falls. And in fact, it was pretty much like, just go tubing out in your little inflatable, your kid's inflatable tub out in the backyard. It wasn't that dangerous. But here's the article. The Obama administration amped up its offensive Sunday with Republicans over the $85 billion in across-the-board federal spending cuts scheduled to kick in on Friday, releasing fresh warnings of a real impact on people's lives. Despite GOP claims, Republican claims, the White House is exaggerating the potential ill effects. I'm interested to see that they're concerned about the real impact on people's lives, and I wonder if they were concerned about the real impact on people's lives when they enacted the legislation that allowed cut our tariffs and allowed our industries and jobs, many of them, to be removed to places like China or Mexico. Were they concerned about the real impact on people's lives back then? I mean, we can point at legislation after legislation where the government seems to have no concern with the real impact on people's lives. But in this one, the Obama says, oh my gosh, there's going to be a real impact on people's lives. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. A new administration report shows the effects of the so-called sequester cuts seeping far beyond just non-essential government workers and programs. My question is, why do we have any non-essential government jobs and programs? If they're not essential, get rid of them. Why do we have them? It's just a way of supporting big government. And here's something from Jason Furman. He's quoted in the article. He says, this will have macroeconomic consequences, cost hundreds of thousands of jobs across the country and jobs throughout the private sector from contractors. Jason Furman is the principal deputy director of the White House National Economic Council. Now, we're going to have lions and tigers and macroeconomic consequences, Melody. Oh, my. Huh? And he also warns this will have serious programmatic consequences. Oh, my gosh. I thought it was bad when we were having macroeconomic consequences, but now we're also going to have serious programmatic consequences. You know how bad that is, Melody.
Oh,
when
yes.
When it gets to programmatic consequences, uh-oh, we're in deep trouble then. The administration, now this cracks me up. The administration says federal agencies are drafting plans ahead of Friday's deadline. Apparently, the federal agencies are drafting plans for this cut in spending 1 week before the deadline. This deadline has been known to exist for most of 2 years. The government is drafting plans to deal with the problem 1 week before the problem. Now, actually doing nothing until the last minute makes a lot of sense. Then, by virtue of having failed to prepare for sequester, they've had most of 2 years to prepare. Have they done anything? No. They let it go to the last minute. By virtue of failing to have prepared for the sequester becomes an emergency that must be stopped. It's like all of a sudden the sequester is here on Friday. So, oh, my gosh, how did this happen? Well, they knew it was going to happen for most of 2 years. Why didn't anybody get ready in the meantime? What was the sequester attempt in 2011 to cause government to behave responsibly by cutting its spending and debt? How has the government responded to the proposed sequester? By acting irresponsibly to do nothing to prevent the problem from morphing for a year or two from an opportunity to get ready into an emergency that will suddenly take place this Friday. So far as I can see, thanks to government's refusal to behave responsibly, the sky is falling, Melody, and it will continue to fall this Friday, and that may be why the stock market is down and gold is up, because the sky is falling over the sequester. I don't know. We can go on with this, but I guess we got a minute or two left. Here's another one from the article. But Republicans accuse the president of hypocrisy, saying he has chosen to go on a nationwide public relations tour in attempt to shame them, meaning shame the Republicans, instead of staying in Washington to work on a deal. Well, this to me is a little bit foolish. I mean, how do you shame a politician? Does anyone know? I don't think it's possible. I think one of the requirements for being a politician in this country is having no conscience and therefore no capacity for shame. So the Republicans complain that the president is trying to shame them. I think that's silliness. Nobody is shameful. No one is subject to shame. And that's what being a politician means, never having to say you're sorry. What else? More time to actually. The House needs to spend less time explaining how bad the sequester will be and more time working to stop it. This is from a spokesman for House Speaker John Boehner, Ohio Republican. Thus, it appears that both the Republicans and Democrats agree that sequestration should not take place. It's almost as if we had only one political party, the big government party, rather than two political parties that might have some opposition. All this suggests is that we may see a little sequestration. They'll cut some of the spending this Friday. They may continue to cut it for a couple of weeks. We will go through a period of appropriate drama when we are all impressed that, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. The government can't spend as much money as it wants. But the sequestration will end quickly. It'll end. It might take as long as a couple of months. It could end in as little as a couple of weeks, maybe even in a few days. But Republicans and Democrats are agreed they're not going to cut government spending. We will be back. I'm Alfred Adask, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Take a break for some commercials and be right back. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Meat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Let me finish up with a couple more comments on the sequestration, and then we'll try to conclude, does it really pose a danger, is it merely another one of Washington's little dramas? It's like, watch, we should have a reality show. The Real Congressman of Washington, D.C. Yeah? It would be just as goofy as the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or wherever. I don't know. They have the Housewives show that they put on periodically. I mean, it's just nuts. The administration and Democrats allege that only a balanced approach can deal with sequestration that includes tax increases. All right? They want tax increases. They don't want to cut government spending. Are you crazy? That's what America's all about, is more and bigger government, baby. That's what freedom's all about, is by employing more government staff in order to walk around and keep an eye on the rest of us. Even before Sunday's conference call, administration proxies had fanned out throughout the morning talk shows, warning of catastrophes that would result if $85 billion in spending cuts are imposed on a federal government that spends more than $3 trillion annually. You understand that? We are talking about cutting spending on the total budget, not just the deficit, the total budget, less than 3%. All right, thereabouts. They're going to cut. Oh, my God, it'll be a catastrophe if government cuts spending by 3%. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood warned on Sunday furloughs, including air traffic controllers, will be imminent if the spending cuts kick in on Friday. Why do we fire the air traffic controllers? Why don't we fire the TSA people that are out there groping passengers in the lounge? All right? Why don't we fire the TSA? I wonder how many of those will be laid off. They dramatize this to try to make a point that these things are far more dangerous than they perhaps really are. And here's the last one I want to get to before this one cracks me up. This is from Education Secretary Ann Duncan, apparently. It says, we don't have any ability with dumb cuts like this to figure out the right thing to do. This is on CBS Face the Nation. We don't know what to do if they don't give us any more money. Good. That's just wonderful. I mean, how many people do you think you can put, if someone said, I'm going to cut your pay by $100 a week. Are you so dumb you wouldn't be able to figure out what to do in order to make ends meet? But apparently, we have people in Washington who are. They know they can't conceive of having their budget cut. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. What shall they do, Melody?
They need to call Discount Gold and Silver Trading.
Good idea.
It is amazing now, you know, when you really think about it. I mean, this $85 billion, I mean, it's, what, a trillion over 10 years. It's nothing. It's,
yeah, it's
like
a
penny on a dollar.
Yeah, it's a little bit better than that. It's actually about 3 cents on a dollar,
oh,
but so what?
Excuse me.
You know, they make
I mean, you have to put everything in a perspective. Now, it can put some sort of a psychological impact onto the markets. I think you'll see more of that, perhaps, than the actual impact. I mean, everybody gets all in a tizzy about all these teachers and so forth, you know, being laid off. Half of them should be laid off anyway. What do they teach? Mm-hmm. You know, they teach all the wrong things anyway. But
if they teach anything at all.
Yeah.
I've seen reports that our education system is now rated number 17 in the world. It used to be number one when I was a kid. Now it's number 17. And the solution to the problem is we need to spend more money, but we've been spending more money all along, and all we're getting is worse and worse education. And it's just another illustration. The more money you give government, the more screwed up things become. You want things to straighten out in this country? Stop funding the government. What else, Melody?
It's weird, Al. Sometimes I think it's like, things just don't matter anymore. You never know what's going to hit the markets. You could have something stupid and it'll affect the markets. I mean, Europe was downgraded. Moody's downgraded Europe, and it's like, what's the big deal? You know, it's just like it is really kind of amazing anymore. So when you have that type of confusion and you have that type of disconnect from all these various markets, you know, good news is bad news is good news, and it affects the markets in this way. The one thing that you do want to be holding is gold and silver. This is what's going to provide you that stability. And I was just looking at the $20 gold pieces. Yeah, we had gold up $9-$10 on the day, but we had $20 gold pieces, Mint State 63, $20 gold pieces. They're up $30 from this morning. So they had a tremendous move today. Mint State 62, $20 Liberties, they were up $30. Mint State 63, $20 Liberties, they were up $15. The higher grades seemed to hold steady, but we didn't have that type of impact. When we had that price drop a week ago, when we had gold drop, they didn't have that big drop as the lower grade. So now the lower grades are beginning to catch up. So a great performance in $20 gold today. And the market's kind of started out a little bit slow in the coin business. But I'd say the last few hours of trading day, buying has been a lot heavier. And this is when we saw most of the gains in the $20 gold pieces was later on this afternoon. So, folks, if you're looking for $20 gold pieces, it's a great time to be buying them. There's always a market for them. Day after day after day, Al, someone will say to me, and they hear it from somewhere. They listen to other programs. Mm-hmm. They read other things. And, you know, some of these people can be, you know, in the limelight and on mainstream media and so forth. And I hear them say, there won't be a market. There won't be a market for some silver products. There won't be a market for $20 gold pieces. And you know what? These people really don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I would disagree to this extent. It is possible. It is remotely conceivable that there might. But here, let me finish.
No, they're referring to.
Let me finish.
No,
let me finish.
No, let me say.
No, let me finish. What I'm saying is, if there is ever a time when there is no market for gold or gold coins or whatever, that time will be 6 months or a year after the stock market and the bond markets have completely disappeared. It will be the last possible thing that could happen in terms of the markets. There will be markets for gold when there are no markets for corn.
Yeah.
It'll be the last thing to go. Nothing's impossible. But some things are so improbable, so unlikely that they become absurd. You will not see an end to any market in gold until you have first seen a complete dissolution of any market for stocks. I mean, the stocks will be absolutely worthless. There'll be no place to sell them. Same thing will be true with bonds. And then, and when they're gone, gold and silver will still work, unless you'll almost need an act of God it just isn't possible.
What I was going to refer to is a lot of these people who say that when they say $20 gold pieces, they truly are looking to the rare coin.
Mm.
The coin that we were talking about, that $5 million coin or that $500,000 coin, that will be a select market. And no, you're not going to find a buyer for that. This, you know, you won't be calling me up on the phone, and yet you could. I mean, it's pretty easy to find buyers. My wholesalers will buy those types of coins every day of the week. You'll just have a low bid for it. But there's always even a market for those coins. But you could find that market dry up a little bit. So,
you know, the truth of the matter is this. There is no perfect solution to every problem that might come our way. But there are some solutions that are stupid and guaranteed to fail, and there are other solutions that are smart in because they have a high probability of success. Can we sit back and say one solution is absolutely positively? No. Going to work? No, we can't say that. But we can say a bunch of them are stupid, and you have to do the best you can with what you've got. Huh? Because you don't know exactly how problems are going to resolve or how they're going to shake out. You do the best you can with what you've got. And at the moment, that means gold and silver.
And they
what else we got, Melody?
They can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And folks, make sure you visit our website. Get signed up for our weekly newsletter, dgscoins.com. That is dgscoins.com. And if you have any questions for today's program, questions@dgscoins.com. Email would be questions@dgscoins.com. But make sure you get there, bring us your questions, and if you want to pick up that phone today, 800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191 if you have any questions for us for the radio program today. And home prices climbing at their fastest rate since November 2005. We touched on that briefly on Friday, Al.
Well, we'll touch on it again. I don't remember that we did, but I don't remember what happened. What did we talk about in the first segment of the program, Melody?
Today?
Hmm. See, you don't remember either, do you? See? Your memory isn't any better than mine.
Did we talk about...
you're having a senior moment. No, it's not. It's not even a senior moment. We just don't pay attention, that's all. What happened last Friday. And today, the way things are moving in the world, getting to a point where you can't remember what happened.
Remember everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. I had my first wife used to remember things that I have no recollection of whatsoever. And I have a sneaking suspicion she made a bunch of it up. I remember.
No.
Well, not necessarily. Any case, home prices are up at the fastest rate since November 2005. A lot of people see this as cause for optimism. The January existing home sales come in better than expectations, and that's always, they beat expectations. And it's like saying, you know, I expected the house would burst into flames, but in fact, it's merely smoldering. You know, so the house has beat expectations if it's merely smoldering rather than burst into flames. The national median home price for all housing types was $173,600 in January, up 12.3% from a year ago. Now, that's a big increase, and for all the trouble we've seen in the housing market, it is cause for optimism, at least within that industry. You know, within the home sale industry, I'm not necessarily talking about home construction, but sales You know, if the prices are up, in theory, sales are also up. It says existing home prices continued to rise for the 11th straight month. That's certainly an important and strong trend. This is also the biggest gain since November 2005, when home prices were up 12.9%. Breakdown by region shows median existing home prices surged the most in the West, up 26.6% year over year in January to $240,000 each. But the existing home sales in the region were down the most, falling 5.7% to a pace of 1.15 million. Meaning what? The prices are going up, but the number of sales are going down. What possible, how do you justify this? How does this make sense? The demand is down, the homes and the prices are going up. The only way that makes sense is if they are taking vacant homes off the market. I mean, in supply and demand theory, if the demand goes up, the price goes up. If the supply goes down, the price goes up. And the only way it makes sense, the prices are going up in the West, at the same time demand is going down, is if the supply of homes available for sale is being diminished, or somebody's doing something to the numbers. What do you think, Melody? Any of this make sense to you?
No, it really doesn't make sense. And you know what's interesting, too? You have so many different areas of this country where you can see great home prices and other areas, very depressed home prices. You can see prices rise around this area where I live, State College, Pennsylvania. Actually, the real estate market is pretty hectic. You can go to other places around this country and the real estate market is fairly flat. So you have a lot of foreign money coming into this country, buying up properties. And I also thought that I'm not quite sure how the rentals play into some of these reports as far as the home sales. Wouldn't have anything to do with the home prices, but the numbers of home sales, you have to break it out sometimes, or home starts includes a rental. So again, just another mixed picture of numbers. And
the question becomes, where do you get numbers that you can rely on? And I, you know, the one answer that crosses my mind every time is John Williams at shadowstats.com. He's apparently making an effort to try to filter out the manipulation and deliver honest, objective numbers to the people. But our economic system has become so complicated and polluted with false numbers or numbers that are intentionally slanted or incomplete that it's got to be an extraordinary job for Mr. Williams to filter through all the garbage to get to something that you may be able to rely on. And we have to have things. We have to have numbers that we can rely on. Otherwise, how can anyone make an intelligent decision about how to protect themselves, how to invest their wealth, how to protect their wealth? How can you make an intelligent decision if you don't have numbers you can rely on? How can the government run the economy if we can't decide honestly, what is the inflation rate? What is the unemployment rate? What is the true size of the national debt? We are awash in lies, falsified numbers down at the private level, up at the government level, and all by itself. If we are in a world where lies predominate, that has to be a warning. That has to be it's one of the leaves in the breeze where you say, look, if everybody's lying, where do I get hold of some truth? And part of the answer to that is you get a gold coin, you hold it in your hand. That becomes a kind of truth that you can count on in a world where we are increasingly beset by lies. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody a call. She will be back chained to the phone about 15 minutes from now. Can't catch her on the phone. You can call on the program, but, I mean, you can't call her at the office. Carla will be there to answer, take calls at the office, but give Melody about 15 minutes. Wait till the end of the, just past the top of the hour, she'll be there and she'll be happy to talk to you. What else are we going to talk about, Melody?
Well, before we go to Dave, I just want to say something, too. You know, Carla and I, we do the work of about 6 people. We work hard, we work long hours, and people will always say to me, well, you know, we thought we'd go with the smaller firm, and I don't have a problem with that, but lots of times people think the smaller firms can't do what the big firms do. Well, I'll tell you what, we can do more than the big firms, and that doesn't give big firms any more credibility than a smaller firm. I mean, you know, I mean, mom and pop shops are, they should be supported. These big firms, they charge more money. They don't do anything more than what we do. Our money goes back. They offer less. Our money goes back into programs. We support other programs. And, of course, what they do is they go right, all their money goes right back into their pockets. And we are different. But just because we work hard, we work more hours than they do. We don't have boiler rooms. We don't have, you know, a staff of 20 used car salesmen to, you know, call and solicit our clients, and that's the majority of their staff. Our brokers are they work in a boiler room. They're thrown a list of people and say call them, And if you sell this much this month, we'll move you up a little bit, and maybe you'll get a fresh phone call that comes in. And so just because we got a few people working doesn't mean that we're really small and that we can't do what everyone else does.
You know, there's another important point on that. When you get, you deal with the larger firms, you ultimately deal with salesmen who don't have real interest in the firm. All right? They don't have a commitment to integrity. Their commitment is merely to sales. When you deal with Discount Gold and Silver, you will deal with Melody primarily. And you will get as much integrity as you can hear from her on these radio programs. You're not going to deal with some stranger who might be there today and gone in 90 days. You're dealing with somebody who's been there. The person who's been there for, what, 17, 18 years now, Melody?
Yes.
Yeah. It makes a difference. Huh? It's her business. She has to protect the business, not just by making sales, but also by trying to really maintain customer confidence, satisfaction. She doesn't just think in terms of how much she's going to make this month. She has to think in terms of how much she will earn next year and the year after that. And she can't continue to support herself unless she treats people fairly and honestly. And there is a great deal to be said for dealing with a small company where you are confident in the integrity of the person that you're dealing with. You can't have that confidence when you're dealing with strangers in a boiler room from a big sales operation.
Or the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't know how big these firms are on the internet. They have a pretty page. They have a lot of names. Half the people, half those names probably aren't even real. Half the time I can't even find the owner on those web pages. And just because they have 40 pages of product doesn't mean that they're a big firm. So, but again, it's just perception and bonjour. We've got David from Michigan.
Hi, Al. Melody.
How you doing, Dave?
Hi, Dave.
Good, good. Hey, Leslie, you know, we're the biggest debtor in the world, and yet we still have foreign aid for people. And 80% of that foreign aid, you know, they've talked about bailing out GM, but 80% of this foreign aid has to come back to our defense industry, and the defense industry is the biggest receiver of free money. And I think that would be the first thing I would cut if I was president. And then I would do away with people moving out of the country like General Electric and what have you and give them a tax-free status. You tell them you got to come back here or you're going to pay in your profits no matter where you make them. And three, everybody works. And if you don't like what you're – well, if you're not making enough, the government can supplement you. But you leave the house every day. You're not fourth generation sitting home watching I Love Lucy. And you have to and then the government will help you. Right now they say there's not enough skilled workers in America, so we got to bring these people from India in. And, you know, that's ridiculous. But then again, I've heard that they're more submissive.
Why don't we have enough skilled people in America?
Because the education system's not there.
Yeah, I understand. That's exactly right. The reason we don't have enough skilled people in America is we don't have the mechanisms, the determination, and perhaps even the industrial base left to teach them to be skilled.
But it isn't the you know, when I went for my electrical apprenticeship, they made me take calculus for electrical engineering, and I was never going to use that as an electrician, but they almost even make it hard for you to get your journeyman card.
I understand that. And they want to regulate everything, and the truth of the matter is the whole purpose is to regulate, not to improve. It becomes
means it's control. It's total control.
It's not about improving quality. It's about a means of control. That's all. It's like
and
teaching
finally,
people.
You know, we're cutting back things we need like police, fire, and education. Well, especially with police. Joe Biden had the answer the other day. You don't need an AR-15. You go out on a balcony and you fire two shots off with a 12-gauge shotgun. And I guess your problem's solved.
Yes,
did you hear him say that last week?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And he's not just talking about a semi-automatic shotgun. He says a double-barrel shotgun, which means you only got two shots.
Well, yeah, everybody knows they're empty.
Yeah.
What a genius, eh? Anyway, with that, I'll let you go. But, yeah, we're just giving money away to everybody, and it's And everybody should work. And like I say, if you don't make enough, they supplement you.
We don't even have the money. I saw a report just lately, Dave, that the average American makes 50 grand a year. I don't remember the exact number, but it translates out into about $132, per day? Yeah, per day. The average welfare recipient, the cost of the average welfare recipient is $168 a day.
Right.
In theory, people on welfare are making more money than people who are actually out working for a living.
Oh, they are. And not talking the cost of operating a car to go to work or lunch or clothes or all these other things. Mm-hmm. That's why I retired. Yeah. I figured out I'd be working for $4 an hour if I went to work.
I think the thing to do, the solution is obvious then. When you get to the age where you should be retired, don't sign up for Social Security. Get unemployment. Get welfare. Complain that you can't find a job. I'm not retired. I'm unemployed. Give me something for nothing.
People today are using disability, and they're giving disability out like there's no tomorrow.
I understand.
And they want people just to be used to being fed, and then finally one day they quit feeding you, and everybody dies, you know, because they don't know how to survive on their own.
I understand. That's the great danger in this. We used to be able to support ourselves in this country, and now increasingly large percentages of people are simply incapable of supporting themselves. In part because many of our industrial jobs have moved overseas, and these are the jobs that people could get if they were not particularly intelligent, not particularly well-educated, but still able to put in a hard day's work. Someone tell them what to do, they can do something. They're entitled. There's plenty of people like that. They have value in the society, and they may not be able to run a major corporation, and they may not be able to understand calculus, but they can still push a broom, push a shovel in places where it needs to be pushed. All right?
When you sell those, maybe we should all go to Mexico.
What do you leave for these people?
Nothing.
Where are they going to work?
They're going to sit home.
They're going to sit home, or they're going to go thump heads. And on one level,
maybe we all should go south of the border for a week, come back as undocumented citizens, a.k.a. illegal aliens, and get our checks.
Yeah, we might be better off.
You know,
well, anyway, Dave, thank you.
Fall apart.
Appreciate you.
Okay, good talking to you.
Talk another time. Thank you. Bye-bye. What else, Melody?
You know, it really is a sad day. I was just talking today. We were talking about there was a young lady who, you know, she has a live-in partner, and she's going to have a baby, and she probably makes $40,000 a year, and she'll get assistance for her baby.
Yeah,
and it's like it's just complete insanity. Like, who says no? Who approves these? Who says no to these, to the paperwork?
And where does the money come from?
Where does it come from?
It comes from people who, in theory, mm-hmm. are working for a
yep.
living, all right, and actually making a productive contribution to society. They are being diminished so that people who are doing nothing but showing up can live large. I understand there's a place for compassion. I understand a bunch of it, but if you want to have compassion for people that are poor and unemployed, have it and express it at your church. Take up a contribution. Dip into your own wallet to support the people that you think need to be supported. My guess is that most of the people who will stand up and argue in favor of welfare or any of the subsidies for the rich, welfare for the poor, I don't believe any of these, I won't say any, but the vast majority of the people that support these ideas, they're not giving up any of their own money. They're saying, let's legislate to make this other guy over here who's actually earning something. Let's make him cough up something and give it to these people who aren't working. What I'm saying is we shouldn't be taking money from people who work for a living and just redistributing to people who don't. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any money going to the people that are unemployed. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that it shouldn't be legal to take money, steal money from people who work for it. to give it to people who don't work it for it. Let the people keep what they earn, and the people who are don't have any, who aren't employed, don't have anything, we're going to have to deal with them on the basis of charity rather than government-imposed mandates that take money from the productive and give it to the non-productive. I know it's not a perfect solution, but the day's coming when we're going to have that solution. And those of you who are living on welfare and subsidies and grants and so on, you're going to have to, when that day comes, you're going to have to learn to support yourselves. And you had better be ready to do it, because when it happens, you're going to be in deep trouble. A day is coming when the government is going to fail. It will be the God that failed. It will be unable to keep all of its promises. It won't be able to provide all of the money and the welfare and the subsidies and the grants that it's done up until now. And those of you who depend on government to survive, you are suddenly going to be cast adrift like a child who has been thrown into a pool. The child better know how to swim. You understand? Otherwise, that child had better hope to God. There's some good Samaritans around that pool who are prepared to jump in and save the child as an act of charity, because if they don't, the child is going to be in big, big trouble. All of us got to learn how to work. We're going to relearn it one way or another, and you can relearn it now. It's kind of like that business with government knew the sequestration was coming this Friday. They've known for most of 2 years. Did they do anything until just now? No. They let it go till the last minute. It's human nature. But it just means you're going to turn a problem that you could deal with into an emergency that you might not survive. Insofar as you and I do the same thing, we are as vulnerable as the people in government who are now drafting plans on what to do this Friday if their income gets cut, their spending capacity is reduced by $85 billion over the course of their balance of the year. World is nuts. One of the preventions from being exposed, the insanity, get yourself some gold, get yourself some silver.
And, you know, and Frank makes a point. He says, no cost-cutting measures can work if America produces nothing but commercial paper. So let them cut as much as they want.
The whole thing is just nuts.
It is.
Just becomes nuts. And the only way it holds together is people stand there and look at you, look you straight in the eye and pretend it's not nuts. But it is. It's crazy, and that's where we are. Where we are also is out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back tomorrow with Roger Sales. Melody and I will be back on Wednesday. In the meantime, thanks for listening. May the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.